The undiscovered black country, the folks don't seem to know. The undiscovered black country, where everyone should go. People walk or cycle round, they pass the time of day. The undiscovered black country has places tucked away.
Now, I went on one of my walks the other day, and it brought back a story from years ago. I went to go to Sandwell Valley, but I parked near to West Bromwich and walked through Dartmouth Park to see that it had changed quite a lot. Because when we were Babs, we used to wrap some pieces up in greaseproof paper and have some dandelion and burdock pop, ice cream soda, remember ice cream soda? And sometimes we'd have some lemonade that my granddad made. It'd be like bubbling behind the couch. And we'd walk up there with me family, all my aunties and uncles, and they'd take, like, I suppose you'd call it a throw over now, wouldn't you? But it wore, really. It was just like a blanket. And we'd have a picnic there in Dartmouth Park. And we don't really ever think about Sandwell Valley. I don't know if it was there, or it might have been a working farm at the time. But obviously now there's Sandwell Valley either. And my daughter had said the bab wants to go to Sandwell Valley and have a look at the animals and everything like that. And also there was a massive field full on sunflowers, a bit like them painted by that artist, got a name like Cuff. Goff, that's it. Him who chopped his ear roll off for summit. I mean, it's a bit extreme when you got a bit of a earache. Why don't you stick onion art in it and it would have gone, wouldn't it? Any round up. I said, go on then, I'll go. Because I hadn't really been down there. And we sort of walked through Dartmouth Park and I was telling her about when the big lake's still here and I used to go out on the lake and folks used to swim in the lake and we'd have like our blanket on the ground and there'd be probably 20 kids and all my aunties and uncles there and you'd have an afternoon. It was like our version on going to the seaside because we never went anywhere. And that was like a big trip from us, from Albury, which is like 3 miles away. But we went down to the valley, which was nice. And there's a lovely lake down there to another farm at the back, I think. We started walking around and stuff and having a look at the stuff around there. Very, very nice. And then we went and started to go in stables and there were like goats and like llamery things, I think they were. And osses, obviously, ponies and osses. And then there was like the smaller stable and in there there was like rabbits and things like that, littler things. And then we got to this one little place and there was like these little hutches. And I said to my daughter, I said, what's in there? And I said, homsters. And I went, oh, I'm going. And I went, what do you mean, the money homsters? Are you going to bite you them down there anyway? You can't get to them. I says, I don't care, I'm going. And I says, what's up with you, Dad? And I said, oh, I never told thee. And I went, what? I says, well, don't you know when we was little and I used to be a bit on a varmint tar? I said, well, one of the reasons why, other than other reasons, your big uncle, our big un, don't really spake to me very much, is that I killed his homster. And I went, you did what? I said, well, not actually killed it, sort of lost it in a way. I have nightmares about it now. So I have this phobia about rodents, but particularly homsters in a way. So don't say anything. I'll go and get a cup of tea from the cafe. Go and tell the bab that your granddad's gone to have a drink. And then maybe I'll tell you about it after. I said, well, I think you should, really, because obviously it's been troubling you all these years. And if it is that my uncle Dow spiked you because on it, then you need to sort it out with him and apologise. And he said, well, I have sought and apologised, but, well, I'll tell you about it. I'll go and get a cup of tea and I'll tell you about it. So off I goes to the cafe. Aaron, the Bab and Ian, go and have a look at the sunflowers, a field or something. If ever you go to Sandwell Valley and it's like late summer or something like that, go and see the sunflowers because it's a field full of sunflowers. Some of them 5 foot, 6 foot high, and they make a path through them and you can walk through them and it's just absolutely busting. So when he rode up, they comes back and we're in the tie room and I says, is this all right to tell? Will it upset the Bab? And I said, well, no, not really. And I says, what, Grandad? And I said, well, it's a story about why your granddad could really have much to do with homsters because when he was very little, he lost your uncle's homster. And I went, oh, how did you do that? And I said, well, it's sort of a long story and I'll weave it in with the other stuff so you understand. But this is really the first time that I've told anybody and us coming on this walk, aren't we, nature and all that, has sort of triggered it. And I don't know why it's triggered it. I think maybe the fresh air has opened like the pores in my memory. And rather than just dream about this homster looking at me, I sort of thought about it in the daylight. So any road up. We was little, and I've told you about your uncle. And he was very, very different from me and your Uncle Gary and the little and Paulie. He was like, it was like chalk and cheese, whereas we were rough and tumble. You know, we'd go and get mucky, we'd go scrumping, we'd climb trees, we'd hang upside down off the lintel. He would save sparrows, or you'd see a sparrow in the shed with his wing bandaged, or he'd make like towns of worms, whereas we'd get a worm and you'd like stick a nail in it, the one end, and then you'd stretch it as far as it'd go on the line prop and until it bossed in two, because we was told that they just growed again, so what did it matter? But he'd go mad. He'd go mad at me. I call her that, that's an animal, that's an animal. And we go, oh, boring, go away. And he'd do, he'd go fishing and stuff like that, and if I had to go with him, and I just got bored to tears, him and his mates, I'd just like chuck bribbles at the flouts, big balls at the flouts, and then they'd tie me to trees and things until they'd finished to keep me out the road. So we day sort of hit it off as like brothers. I mean, he was a lovely, lovely brother, don't get me wrong, but he was just strange. He was like a mini. Who's him who does all that, you know, laugh on the planet and laugh, think, Attenborough. He was a bit like him, really, but he was only like 7 and I was only 6. And I sort of used to get his gout leading up to this because he had goldfish. You know, when you took clothes to Rag and Bone Man and they give you a goldfish or a balloon or something, he'd always have a goldfish, always. And we'd say, we don't want a goldfish, I want a balloon. And he'd go, well, I'm having a goldfish. And he'd be out playing with his mates and I'd think, well, I wonder if they can breathe out of water. So we used to take them out, like stick them on the draining board. And then I'd forget, I'd go climbing or doing Olympic Games, jumping over the line prop and like some co-op milk crates in the back garden. I'd come back and they'd be like bent double and dry and jed. And so then I had to like throw them in the bin and get them out the road if I were to come back. And I just said, well, they was floating on the surface, so I chucked them away. And I don't think he really believed me then, because it happened quite a few times. But the homster was a big thing. The homster was the biggest thing. Mickey is another story, the bird, because that was everybody's, really. It was probably our father. So how are you going to count that? You know, when I let Mickey out and the cat next door got him. Are you going to tell you about that? Because that's sort of more our dad's budgie, although it upset the big one. But this was his homster, and it was pride and his joy. And he looked after it, and it was in a cage in the shed next to the coal place. And he'd go in and he'd clean it out religiously. And he'd look and he'd bring it out, and at night he'd have it on his lap while we're watching the telly and all. And I'd go, take the thing away. I don't want to watch the telly with a bloody hamster on your lap. And he'd go, no, no, it's all right. And he'd go, look at it. And I'd go, I don't want it by me. Any road up. This one day, he was left to look after me. I think mother was on the lathes and Mrs. Skett had gone shopping. And he was left to look after me. And he daylight looking after me because I just got bored quick. And Peter Skett, come and knock the door. And Neil opened it and he said, coming over, you're coming over to our house. I've got these things I want to show you. It's like an ant village that I've built, and it looks great, and you know, I might be able to do one. And Neil says, of course, I'm looking after bloody Ruxin, eh? And he says, well, you'll be all right for five. You've only got to be about 5-10 minutes. It don't matter. You can have a look and all that. And he said, he's got to behave himself for that long, eh? So he looked at me and gave me like the Jedi. And he said, I'm going over Mrs. Skits with Peter, and I short be long. I mean, if that was the case, you know, short be long, it wouldn't have been that bad, but it short become like long, and it was a way longer than I thought it'd be. So I said, nah, I'll be all right. I'll just finish my comics and all, and I've got plenty to be getting on with. So he said, well, listen, I'm telling you now, do you touch a thing of mine? Do you go near a thing of mine? Don't you touch a thing of mine, because if you do, your life will be worth living. And I went, why do I want to touch anything of yousen? Eh? I'll be bothered about it. So he said, right, I'll be back in about 10 minutes. And I said, fair enough then, I'll just read my comics. So, of course, I'm there, hanging upside down off the settee, reading my comics. Don't know why I did it that way. And our aunties used to come in and go, oh, Kath, tell him to get up, he'll turn his brain reading his comics like that. Well, I think that's probably what's happened, to be perfectly honest, to everybody. But it don't matter, does it? So one of the moral of the story is don't let your kids hung upside down reading comics. So it was about, and I was watching the clock. I'd read Roy of the Rovers, I'd read Alf Tupper, I'd read The Purple Cloud, everything, and kept watching the clock. Went past 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes. So then I started to get bored, I got up and I was looking in the drawers, see if there was anything to eat, nothing there, because we never had any money. So there was never anything in the cupboard. There was probably the mate on the couch stone, that was about it. Went upstairs, run up and down the stairs about 26 times, and I thought, oh, what can I do? You shouldn't have been away this long. Now I'm really, really, really bored. And I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll go and see if his hamster's all right. And this thing went in my head, you know, this little voice going, don't do it, it's his hamster, don't do it, it's his hamster. But paid no mind to that, did I? Because I was a ruction, I was a varmint. So, gets a key, no, because it's hung up outside the shed door. Opens the door, there he is. And I thought, well, now that I'm in here, I might as well take him out. Whoa, alarm bell's ringing. So, I text him out. And I text him in the kitchen. And what I do is I put him in the colander so we can all get out. And then I thought, we could have some fun here. I'll get all the pots and the pans and I'll put them in a circle. And then I'll put him in the circle and see how fast he can run round. So I'll get all mother's pans out of the larder, them all over the floor. The mate tin, put that up on end. And I carefully, I form this circle and this little hamster's head's over the top of the colander, just having a look at me thinking, what's going on here? I don't like this. I don't like this. He's been told not to touch me. His brother has told him not to come near me. So what's he doing with me in a colander and all them pots and pans in a circle? Anyway, so I picks him up, though. I puck the hamster up and I put him in the circle and I just said to him, we'll have a run. Run round. I've made you a circle. Run round instead of being cooped up in a cage. He might be, you know, your keeper. But I wouldn't like to be cooped up in a cage. I'm out in the fresh air. Look, back doors open. I'm doing great. So he did trottle round for a bit, round and round a couple of times. And he seemed to be enjoying it. And I thought, this is boring, this is. Watching hamster run round. So I thought, I'm going to read me comics. So I sat there at the kitchen table and I was reading my comics, and he went round a couple of more times. And then he must have thought to himself, I could jump over that pot. I could, you know. It ain't very high. I bet you if I took a run at it, I could jump over the... And I could see him look, and he kept like... You know when folks turn their heads because they've got something going on? And he kept turning his head and he kept looking at me as if to say, yeah, watch me in a minute. I'm going to jump over that pond. And I don't really twig, really. I was just thought, oh, this is boring. I'm going to put him back in a minute. I could be doing with this. I thought it might be a bit exciting having Omster out and him running around, but it ain't actually. It's quite boring. It's even more boring than reading the comics you've read 300 times. And then it happened, eh? Without me knowing, he sort of took this run and then he leapt. And it, you know, when time stands still and everything goes like second by second by second, well, he seemed to fly right up in the air, eh? And he landed the other side and I could see him making a beeline for the back door. And I thought, oh, my God, he's going to jump down the step and kill himself. So after... shoved the chair back, and as I sort of dived to try and catch him, this is all in like slow motion timelessness. We had an owl at the back of our back door. Somebody, it might have been mice, I don't know, but they chewed away the lino, and then there was this owl. Well, we was like 1 on 6, like terastases, and then there was like 2 sets of bricks. So you'd have your outside brick. You'd have a gap of about 3 or 4 inches. And then you'd have your inside bricks with like air bricks. Really well built, these houses was. To be perfectly honest, they was really well built. And very sturdy. But what they had was this channel, you see. And it was about 2 foot down from that, from the kitchen to the ground, really. And as I looked at him, he sort of looked round as if to say, I'm going down that hole. And I looked at the hole thinking, he's going down that hole. And what did he do? He went down that hole, did he? And his little bum, that was the last I said of him, and I like leapt and tried to catch his tail, and I couldn't get his tail. And his little tail slid out of my thumb and my finger and dunk down the hole he went. And I hit the ground. And for a minute, I just lay there and I thought, this'll be a piece of cake, I'll just put my hand down and I'll get him. But what I don't know is, this channel in between the houses went from our house, well, no, not ours, number 11, next to we, which was the last one of the terraced houses, down to number 6. So it sort of was a channel going through all these houses. And little did I know that he would hoss off down there, day, and it might be after that he could get somewhere else. So I started shouting, Ommy, 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 come back, come back, come back, daddy's here for you. Thinking he'd think it was our kid, see, and he'd come back really, really easy. Nothing happened. Nothing at all happened. So then I found the Mars bar that our dad had bought for we for Sundays, because we'd had, our trait on a Sunday was to have a Mars bar cut in four, and then me and our kid, because we was the oldest, had each end, and then the 2 little ones had in the middle. And I thought, well, I'll tempt him with a bit of chocolate. So I got the Mars bar out, and I undid the wrapper, and then I hung it as far down as I could, thinking, oh, you know, he might like the sweetness from a Mars bar. Nothing. Nothing at all. So I had to put the wrapper back, pretend that I hadn't opened it, put it back on the cold stone. Then I tried a bit of cauliflower, tried some runner beans. I tried everything for about 20 minutes. I tried it, and then I started panging, think, Biggin's going to be back in a minute. Oh, my God, Biggin's going to be back in a minute. And I know then, Omster wasn't coming back, was he? You know, he'd gone off somewhere near when he was quite comfortable somewhere, so... My little head started to think, cover up. You've got to cover this up some way so that nobody knows what you've done. So I goes in the shed, gets the key, locks the door. Now, you might spot deliberate mistakes here as we go through this sort of sequence that I do. And then comes in the back door, puts all the pots and pans away, puts everything away, puts a colander away, tidies up, puts the comics everywhere as though I've been reading them, shuns up the Ginnell Gate, climbs across the little wall between me and number 11, and then I lie flat on the shed, on the shed roof. And then I'm just there. And then I must have been there about, I don't know, a quarter of an hour, and then I could hear up the Ginnell Gate. And talking, Peter Skett and our kid. And they come in the Ginnell Gate and in the back door. And then I could hear him say, "Where is he? Of course see him." And Peter was saying, "I don't know, perhaps he's gone over the field, perhaps he's gone over the leisure, playing over the hostel, playing." He went, "Nah, he wouldn't do that, because he knowed he'd be in trouble with mother if he went out on his own. He's got to be about here somewhere." Anyway, he went upstairs. I could hear him go upstairs. Up the stairs, I could hear him go in the rooms. Then they come out. And I think then our kid might have thought, there's something up here. And he said, "I'm going to have a look in the shed." And Pete says, "What for?" I says, "I'm just going to have a look in the shed. I've just got this feeling." Anyway, he gets the key off the wall where I'd left it, on the wall, you know, pretty clever. And he opens the door. And there was the cage, with a door open, empty. First mistake, did I shut the cage, did I? And I locked the shed door. So then he said, "My homster's gone." Peter went, "What? Your homster's gone? This has got the markings of him on him," he said to Peter Skett. And he went, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, how can an homster up on the cage, come out, get the key off the wall, up on the door, and then go off, but before they do that, they lock the door of the shed?" He says, it's got to be him. We've got to find him." So they're going round and round out there, and I'm quiet and anything. And all of a sudden, I hear him, you see. All of a sudden, this face comes over the top. He was on Peter Skate's shoulders, weren't he? His face comes over the top, and he went, "What you doing there?" And I went, "I'm just sunbathing, aye, aye." And he went, "But there ain't any sun out, it's cloudy. Where's the homster?" And he went, "Oh, I don't know, I've been up here for ages." And he went, "Get down here now." And I went, "Nah, I'm all right up here, I'll just stop here." He says, "Get down here now, otherwise I'll rip you off this roof." Anyway, I went, "Look, don't get your hair off. I don't know where your homster is." And we go in. Kitchen, he goes, "So what do you think might have happened then?" "Well, probably a fox." And he said, "So a fox can climb up the wall, get the key off, open the shed door, open the cage, take the homster out, let him run off, leave the cage open, lock the shed door, and then put the key back?" "It's possible," I say, "possible." And he went, "You're lying. You're into this. I know you're into this." And he goes, "Look, big un, I'm really, really sorry about your homster, but I ain't done anything." And he says, "Well, we'll wait till mother gets back." And I went, "That's all right. See, because I could handle mother. I would lose a rag with me." So, of course, we're there and I'm reading my comics and he's pacing up and down and all that. And mother comes in, been on the lathes all day. And he says, "What's the matter with your face, to big?" And I went, "Ask him." And I said, "Why have I got to ask him? Just ask him what he's done." And he goes, "What have you done, varmint?" And I went, "Mother, I ain't done anything. It ain't my fault if his hamster's gone missing." And he went, "What do you mean his hamster's gone missing?" I said, "Well, somehow it's got out in its cage, got through the shed door, and it's gone missing." And I went, "Let me just go and get the boiler stick and I can pile it out on you." And I went, "There's no point, because it ain't me. If you hit me, you will hate me. And I'm telling you that now." Anyway, I get the boiler stick, do I? So I'm straight out to the back door and in the cold place. I put the latch on the door and I taps the door and I goes, "Wait till your father gets home." And he rode up. Day of time for my father to get home. I mean, that comes after. The big un just opens the latch and he comes in the cold place and he piles £7 of S out of me. Absolutely lumps me sick. And then he just puts the latch down and goes in. So, of course, I comes out and I'm all black and blue. My mother says, "What's happened to you?" Well, I can't tell her, can I? Because I'm dropping a mini. And I just say, "I bumped myself on the wall and the cold place and blah, blah, blah." And they said, "Well, go and sit in there. Go and wash your face because I'm covered in black now. And wait for your father." Anyway, Feather comes home, don't we, after the Jedman shift. And I've kept this. I thought if I can just keep it right until the end of the day, I'm going to get away with this. So he comes in and my mother says, you better have a word with him. I said, what for? He's been up to no good, eh, today. And what's he supposed to have done? I've been on since blooming 6 o'clock this morning. I says, I want my supper, don't I? He said, well, just have a word with him. So my father comes up and my father's only got a look at me and I know that I'm going to crumble. I just know that I'm going to crumble. Never put his finger on me in his life, but I know that I thought, I'm losing it. Kept your composure. I'm losing it. So he says, son, what have you done? And the big un said, he's lost me hamster. And he went, you've done what? And I said, he's lost me hamster. Dad, he's lost me hamster. I was out for half an hour and somehow he has got the hamster out in the cage and he's lost it. And he just looked at me and he went, son, what I want you to do now is just tell me the truth. Anyway, you go into overdrive, don't you? You know, you go into 900 mile an hour and you start blarting and everything. Well, he's just coming in and he went out and he left me on my own and I got bored and all this and everything. And then the hamster and I went down the hole and everywhere. And he went, where? He went down the hole and I'll go get him. I tried Mars bar and all this. You did what with a Mars bar? And with the Mars bar and then the cullen and then cauliflower and everything else. And I just shut up and he went to the gas cupboard. And he says, what's the matter with your face? And I couldn't say, well, he's lumped me sick. And I bumped it in the coal hole again and I was running about and everything. He said, well, forget about your face because they're a little. But I'm going to the gas cupboard. So he gets the gas cupboard and he gets me football boots, don't he? And he says, see these? And then my little football boots. And I said, yeah, I know, me football boots, and me football. He says, well, know what you've got on Saturday?
Yeah, we've got a cup match against Southampton.
And he says, well, you are playing. These are going to the gas cupboard and being locked. And when you come and tell me the truth next time, then you can have your boots back. He says, nah, what I'm going to tell you now is, go up the wooden hill, have a wash, get to bed, end the story, down here, nothing out about it. And you apologise to your brother, and that's the end of this episode.
Oh, but Dad, me boots and the cup game and everything else, and the opposite is down the hole. And
he says, forget it, end the story. You've really, when he said that, when he used to say that to me, you have really disappointed me. That was even worse. You couldn't console me, honestly. You lose breath and everything. And my mother used to say, he's going to pass out in a minute. And the big one said, I wish he would. I wish he'd jet himself now. And they go, oh, douse like that. Anyway, in the end, we get to bed. Two at the bottom, two at the top. And by this time, like, the little ones have just gone to bed and just giddied Nick. And he said, my big one turns around and he said, so did you lose him? And I went, oh, he went down the hole. And that was it. And it's funny, ain't it? Little walks trigger stories like that. And there's a million where that one's come from.
The undiscovered black country, the folks don't seem to know. The undiscovered black country, where everyone should go. People walk or cycle round, they pass the time of day. The undiscovered black country, as places tucked away.